30. Today is March 31st, 2005. Welcome to the House Committee on Revenue. We are starting late by previous announcement, so we're going to go ahead and go through these. Colleagues, let's see. We got Highland Park, is that right, from Beaverton?
Yes.
Welcome, Highland Park from Beaverton. You may want to be very careful what you listen to here today. You could go brain dead, so be very, very cautious how much you concentrate on that.
We do.
Just look at us. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session, and this work session is for possible bill introduction. Paul?
Mr. Chair, you have three legislative concepts in front of you. The first one is LC 3455. This modifies the existing pollution control facilities credit. This credit has been modified a number of times over the last few sessions, and this would be a further modification. And actually, some components of this are in a House bill that was approved last session, but did not end up with full legislative approval. So that's in LC 3455. The other two have to do are indirectly related to a bill that the committee has heard, House Bill 2047, and they are efforts at getting at the issues that were raised in that bill regarding intangible and tangible property around energy marketing. And so both of those drafts are indirectly related to it. Because of the relating clause of that bill, it was not possible to get those into a single draft. So you end up with two LCs, LC 3490 and LC 3510.
Colleagues, it's my desire to have 3490 and 3510 printed up as soon as we possibly can so that we can get those folks back in from that deal with this matter of the intangibles issues down in Klamath County. And this also takes care of Seattle Power and Light as well as Tacoma Power and Light. That's the idea. Representative Boquist now moves that we introduce 3510, 3490, and 3455 as committee bills. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. We will ask those bills, those legislative concepts, to move forward as be printed as bills. And then we'll get those back into committee, at least the first two right away. We've had hearings on them. Thank you, Paul. We will close the work session. And now we will open a work session or a public hearing on House Bill 2682. Mary? Is it? Oh. Elizabeth Martin Mahar.
Chairman Butler and committee members, with House Bill 2682, this is allowing the Department of Revenue to waive penalties for late filing or failure to file a state personal income tax return if the taxpayer is a disabled veteran. It requires the department to requires the taxpayer to apply to the department for a waiver and document that the taxpayer is a disabled veteran. It allows applications for a waiver for up to 3 years after the tax return or payment is due. It restricts the waiver to disabled veteran taxpayers who do not have outstanding personal income tax or interest debts. It applies to state tax returns beginning on or after January 1st of 2005, and it takes effect on the 91st day after the end of the regular legislative session. So basically, the revenue impact that you see is based on fiscal year 2003 having 33,554 service-related disabled veterans in Oregon, and then looking at the rates at which all taxpayers are delinquent and have to pay penalties for filing late or failing to file at all. And as you can see in the background there, in 2003 there was there was 1.6 million personal income tax filed, and there were 1% of those that filed 1 month late, and 2% of those returns that filed 2 months late. Then it dropped to 0.3% of the returns filed 3 months late, another 0.3% filed 4 months late, 0.6% filed 5 months late, and then an additional 3% filed 6 months late and 1% failed to file after 6 months. So using those percentages, applying that to the veteran, disabled veteran population, as well as some mean penalties that I was given to you from the Department of Revenue, the estimates then of revenue loss due to waiving these penalties in 2005-06 begins at $159,063, and it's roughly $159,000 each year from that time forward. So for per biennium, it's roughly $318,000.
I'm just interested, Elizabeth. Do we have any other similar statutory? I realize that the department has the director has the ability to waive.
Yeah.
Under special dispensation. But do we have any statutory that mandates certain groups?
Chairman Butler, no, that is, we do not have that under current law. And you can even see from this 305.145 statute, there in line 17 through 20, this basically shows where the Department of Revenue may, and it's a discretion upon good and sufficient cause.
Right.
So that's really where the Department of Revenue has a discretion. If the taxpayer can show good and sufficient cause for why they are filing late, then they can waive the penalty there. And so that's really all the Department of Revenue has. We will be discussing further this issue because Department of Revenue has brought forward a bill that's gone through the Senate and will be coming to House Revenue here soon, which broadens this a bit for good and sufficient cause if it's a first-time offense for the taxpayer. So that's something we'll deal with later in another bill.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Representative Esquivel.
Yes. What is the term disabled veteran? How does that, I mean, that can be very broad.
Yeah, Chairman Butler and Representative Esquivel, all they're doing in this bill, they're not restricting it to like a certain percent or anything of disabled, but they're referring here to, if you look on the back side here, page 2, the disabled veteran has as defined in ORS 408-225. So if you look at that statute, it basically just says means a person entitled to disability compensation under laws administered by the United States Department of Veteran Affairs, a person whose discharge or release from active duty was for a disability incurred or aggravated in the line of duty. Or a person who is awarded the Purple Heart for wounds received in combat. So it's broad. It's not any particular percent of disability, which is sometimes what you see in different statutes or different qualifications.
So a disabled veteran is defined in 408-225.
And that's what
longer.
I just read. Yeah, and it's just really broad in terms of just any disabled veteran who is receiving disability compensation, you know, for their service.
Okay, colleagues, we're going to hear more about this issue. I guess I'm a little bit uncomfortable of moving that into statute on a permanent basis as opposed to continuing to allow the discretion of the director of the Department of Revenue. However, that is certainly not conclusive. Representative Boquist?
Hey, Mr. Speaker, is anyone signed up to testify?
No one has signed up to testify on this particular issue.
If you might indulge me, Chair.
Please. Representative Boquist is recognized.
I believe that the predominant organization that would be either favor or opposed to this would be the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. And I know they have sent information to me in which I'm surprised they are not here, but there was another meeting, I think, scheduled for them simultaneously. But I know that they have both positive and negative issues with this bill,
okay,
as written. And rather than read their opinion into the record, I think they need to speak for themselves. And it would be my suggestion that we put this off for the time being.
I think that's probably a good suggestion, Representative Boquist, and if those folks want to come forward to sign up for it. And this is 30 years of income tax preparation telling you that good and sufficient cause is usually determined by the director, and they've had some latitude in the past, and I would prefer to continue to maintain that latitude. Follow up, Representative Boquist.
Mr. Chairman, to your point, I mean, they have raised those same exact issues.
Okay, and Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I just read the definition, and that means that I am also eligible for this benefit.
I'm very anxious about it. Thank you very much. I knew there was something about
it. Okay.
colleagues, I'm we may bring this back, but I think as staff indicates, there's another bill coming over from the Senate which may address some of these issues. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2682, having no signatures on anyone signed up to testify on that particular issue. I'm now going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2683. Mary?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2633 modifies the definition. 83. I'm sorry, 2683 modifies the definition of disabled persons for purposes of the homestead property tax deferral to include veterans with service-related disabilities. The background on this is that current tax deferral program for disabled persons is limited to persons receiving federal Social Security benefits due to a disability or blindness and to persons receiving Social Security survivor benefits due to disability or blindness. In order to qualify for Social Security benefits, a person's disability must have prevented him from working for at least 1 year. The proposed definition of disability for the purposes of determining eligibility for Oregon's Homestead Deferral Program is based on the definition that is used by the Department of Veteran Affairs. It will include service-related disabilities rated in excess of 30%, as well as catastrophic disabilities, former POWs who have 10 to 20% disability rating, and recipients of the Purple Heart for wounds incurred in combat. Looking at the breakdown from the Department of Veteran Affairs, it looks as if they classify by a rating system the degree of disability, and it says here roughly 11% of disabilities that they rate were due to toxic exposure, and that these vets would not be considered disabled. Okay, so there are subsets of the classification that wouldn't be considered disabled for the purposes of this program. In FY0203, 326 disabled citizens were paid an average deferred amount of about $1,000 per person. Payments to counties totaling $250,000 were less than repayments from general fund to counties. For 2001, the U.S. Census Department estimates there are roughly 25 million U.S. veterans and 8.7 have service-related disabilities. So there's a larger group out there. The Census Bureau that don't have service-related disabilities, they just simply maybe entered the service with disabilities. The Census Bureau estimates there are 339,000 veterans living in Oregon. Using the national percentage for veterans with service-related disabilities, that means there are roughly 33,000 or 34,000 veterans living in Oregon but who have service-related disabilities, not all of whom, of course, would be interested necessarily or eligible to for the deferral, because some of them may be in an age bracket, and I have an age profile of veterans. Some of them might be too young. They may be in school, or they may not be, or they may be institutionalized if the degree of their illness or disability keeps them from owning homes. Okay, and also a percentage of them may not want to defer, because some of them may be younger, and we've seen with the deferral program for the elderly that there may be reasons why elderly may want to defer taxes, but younger people often have a different demographic. They want to hold on to first homes for 5 to 7 years and turn them over, which means they'd have to pay on their deferral, as opposed to senior citizens who may not. So when I actually estimated and came down to a number that seemed reasonable, I really wasn't up into the 33,000 number. And using the $1,000 estimate for the current disabled, I came up with an estimate of roughly a revenue impact of roughly $2.8 million in 0507 and negative $6.1 million for 0709.
Thank you, Mary. Questions of staff? Let's see. John Phillips. Um, Rex, Michelle, I was hoping you really did want to talk on this. I thought maybe we'd get this perspective from the local city taxation issue.
Next bill,
okay. Thank you for coming forward, John.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips with the Oregon Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue administers the deferral programs. And I just want to say a few comments about the programs, the funding for that program, and then the bill itself, if I might. The program was started in 1964. It was the first in the nation. It dealt with seniors, allowing them to defer their property taxes. It helped seniors who were presented with a financial obligation who didn't have the income to pay and would otherwise be forced to be removed from their homes. Oregon is one of 24 states now that have a similar type of deferral program. Initially, the program was funded by advances from the general fund and was administered by the Secretary of State's office, but in the 1980s it was moved to the Department of Revenue. A revolving fund was created. Payments were made into that account initially, again, from the general fund, and then at some time in 1994-95, the fund became self-sufficient.
John, do you have a copy of the revenue impact statement that we've been issued today?
I have just picked it up, but I haven't read it yet.
Okay. It indicates a revenue impact 0507 of 2.8 and 0709 6.1. Is it your understanding that this is administered in the same fashion as the current deferral revolving program, that those funds would be entered in at this time out of the revenue and then eventually recollected back when the homes are disposed of?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding that the deferral payments out of the revolving deferral account to pay for added participants to the program would deplete the fund, and payments in the future at some time would be deposited to repay that debt.
There is it repaid with interest, John?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. So the fund would then be, at some point, would become more than self-sustaining, and then that would start to return to the general fund based upon interest.
Mr. Chair, yes. Okay. There are some variables unique to the disability program that would put some of those repayments in jeopardy, which I'd be happy to describe.
Please.
Okay. The fund owes the state's general fund, the revolving account owes the state's general fund in the neighborhood of $66 million today. And that includes the payment that is due in May of 05, next 2 months from now, of $27.7 million. And we have projections and estimates of how that fund will be affected by those payments. But the variables that I want to mention are detailed on the second page of my testimony. One of the variables is the number of participants. The number of participants could increase with the baby boomers coming to the senior age, meeting the requirements to participate in the program. The taxes that are outstanding increase every year on those accounts. It's a second variable. Another variable is refinancing. We've experienced a high volume of refinancing in the last 5 years. And every time an account that's in deferral refinances, the taxes are repaid. So the revolving account receives an inflow of money. We don't expect that to continue. There's a risk to recovery of monies. One of the risks is if our lien is sufficient to satisfy. We hold not the priority lien in these cases, but we are a lien holder, but we're not a priority lien holder.
So you come after the mortgage?
After existing liens, yes, sir.
So property taxes don't take the superior lien?
Mr. Chair, that's my understanding.
Okay.
There is a ceiling on the lien for disabled accounts. Senior accounts, if there's a lien for the taxes, the lien is placed on the property, and then as the years go by, if it's 15 years, 20 years, we've got some cases that are 23 years old, if the amount of the taxes and interest owed exceeds the amount of our lien, we file a new lien to reflect that increase. That is not true on the disabled accounts because the law does not allow us to refile a lien. When a disabled account enters the system, we're allowed to take a 90% lien on the property. In other words, the market value of the property, the lien is 90% of that. If at such time as that person's obligation exceeds the lien, we're unable to change the lien to reflect the increased obligation. That only applies to the deferral accounts that exist under current law. Another variable is, and let me just state that if this bill passes, the disabled veterans would fall under that same provision. Another provision is that there is no age limit for the disabled program as it exists today, nor as it would be changed by this bill. So for seniors, you've got to qualify by being 62 and have an income threshold. But for disabled people, individuals, there is no age limit. So what we're seeing is we've got about 500 participants in the program, and they are typically significantly younger than the obviously the seniors that are applying for the program, or they would apply for the senior program. So we would expect that this bill would not just attract individuals that are 62 or older. Obviously, they would again qualify for the existing program. So that means that the lien will be in existence for a longer period of time. And I'm just mentioning that so that you're aware of it.
And John, I take it by the longer period of time, and what you're really talking about is the potential that the accumulating property taxes year after year will eventually eat up any of the equity that there may have been at the beginning, at the commencement of the deferral.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. That's what
Whereas
I'm saying.
Whereas with the senior deferral, at present, that senior deferral typically is based upon someone, number one, who's lived in the home a long time and or has a pretty significant equity and intends to reside there until they can no longer reside there, and at which time then that emancipates that advance towards the property tax when they move out of the home.
Mr. Chair, that's very likely.
Okay.
The bill itself, I was here for the earlier testimony, and Representative Esquivel brought up the point about the definition of disability, and that is a concern for us in administering the law. Disabled veterans could mean anyone entitled to disability under that definition, and we don't really know how to verify whether somebody's entitled to it or not, and I suggested language in my testimony as to how to nail that down.
And using Representative Esquivel's previous statement, it sounds like he would qualify under this tax bill as well as a disabled veteran is defined in 408.225. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm 20% disabled due to Agent Orange having diabetes.
Okay.
There are 10 other bills this session, or including this bill, there are 10 bills dealing with some kind of property tax effect for veterans. And just to let you know that there are other issues floating around out there between this bill dealing with deferral. There's bills dealing with the partial exemption in Chapter 307 and various other ones. That is the end of my testimony, unless you want to talk about the revolving account and how we would fund the program should the bill pass.
Thank you very much, John. Questions of Mr. Phelps? Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Colleagues, again, there are several bills out there, and then, Mary, we still have one coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. I think there are. There's
a meeting.
Yeah, but there's others that may be over on the Senate side as well on the same issue. And, colleagues, I haven't worked as closely on this issue with our Senate counterpart, but we'll follow up on it. Other further discussion on 2683? Hearing seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2683, and we'll move to a public hearing on House Bill 2685. 2865. You're right.
Okay. House Bill 2865 increases the current homestead exemption and property tax exemption amounts from $8,700 to $20,000 for a qualified war veteran with a disability of 40% or more, as rated by the Department of Veteran Affairs, and from $11,670 to $25,000 for a qualified veteran with a service-related disability of 40% or more. It also increases the exemption amount for a qualified veteran with a spouse or one dependent from $11,700 to $25,000. And for each additional dependent, the additional exemption amount is increased from roughly $1,500 to $5,000. It changes the
changes to 2007, the initial date for indexing the proposed exemptions by 103% per year, or 3% per year, and changes the maximum exemption to $20,000 or $25,000 if the exemption is applied to properties located in two or more counties. It applies to tax years beginning in July 1, 2006. Under the current law, we have, I didn't put this in the background, I apologize, I would later. Current law, there are about 38,000 vets in this particular program, and they received an average exemption of $12,600 per applicant or per eligible vet. And they total fiscal impact for 05-07 as prepared by the Department of Revenue and reported in its expenditure report was roughly $13.7 million. And in order to come up with the estimate, I took the average of the amount of the average exemption under current law and factored it up by the average amount proposed. It's almost a doubling. And so what you end up with is almost as much or more, a little slightly more than the current impact for 0507. It would be an additional, let's say, $14 million because you're basically doubling the exemption.
Thank you. Mac, we got you and Harley Ray signed up here. Would you please come up on behalf of the veterans? And you can scold us for not doing something on the last one, too, if you want. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, and I represent former prisoners of war, disabled American veterans, veterans of foreign wars, Military Officers Association of America, Military Order of World Wars. On this bill, we see some problems. On line 12 and 13, as certified by a duly licensed physician, we see a problem there. Disabled veterans are rated by the Department of Veterans Affairs or the military service in which the man was in.
Mac, that's part of the current law.
That's right. We think that that should be deleted from the current law because a physician has no idea of the rating charts that are set up, and they're almost equal between the Department of Veterans Affairs and the military service. If I stub my toe, there's nothing to prevent a physician from saying I'm 100% disabled or 10% disabled. He has no guidance. Okay. And I think it'd be unfair to have a physician make a judgment that is different than what the Department of Veterans Affairs or the military service rates as a military disability.
Do we know when that came into the law?
No, sir, I don't.
Okay.
We looked at B and C. If you're a master sergeant and you're retired on 40% disability, the limits on your income, you'd just be exempt from this. But because the amount of money they receive would be above the $20,000 and $25,000. If you're 100% disabled with no other income, A and B, your income would exceed that amount, and that disabled veteran would not be able to use this part of the law.
So it's self-defeating, Mac, is what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay.
On line 6 on page 2, it talks about a section shall equal 103% of the amount of the exemption of the prior tax year. I happen to live in Polk County. I know by law they can raise my assessed value of 6% a year, and it's automatic. I think it's automatic anyway. It comes 6% or more every year. I'd like to see that raised to 106% to make it at least equal to what they can raise my assessed value of my home.
I've got another Polk County resident here. Let me check.
Isn't it 3%? Yeah.
I thought it was 3%, Mac.
And that's Representative Boquist.
Representative Boquist.
Polk County guy.
You're a Polk County guy. What kind of a scheme are you running out there?
I'm pleading the fifth, Mr. Chair. Ask my county assessor.
Raising these. I think, Mac, the law precludes that. However, you could have bond. But Reverend Boquist will check in to see what kind of, and then he'll want to cut it all if it's over 103%.
What we'd really like to see is that line 12 through line 28 be deleted.
On page 2?
On page 1.
Mac, that's the guts of this bill.
I'm sorry, sir. We had a meeting with the Disabled American Veterans Post 6 here in Salem, and this bill was discussed extensively. And my orders, marching orders, are do away with that section of the bill if you can.
His name Boquist. You're talking about marching orders earlier today. You come in with your guns a-blazing, don't you? Okay. Mac, had those folks given you any direction with regard to the, let's see, House Bill 2683 or 2682? By any chance, on the disabled veterans?
They felt that the bill was fine as it was, and they asked for a due pass.
Oh, okay. Okay. But their position was that on page 1, under section 1, lines 12 through 28 should be totally deleted.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
They felt that, if you're a retired master sergeant and you're getting 40% disabled, this just excludes them from this section excludes them from that particular part of this bill. If you're no matter what you are, if you're 100% disabled, collecting no other retirement whatsoever, you're excluded because they get $2,300 and some odd per month, and it would just exclude them from this.
Yeah. Harley Ray, Mr. Ray.
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Harley Ray, and I represent the American Legion for the Department of Oregon. And looking into this bill, I go along with Mac on deleting line the whole page almost. I agree to that, but the thing about it I want to talk about is if you're 100% disabled, quite frankly, I am. I'm also unemployable. So I am living on actually $2,500 a month coming in, which puts me over this. So if there's others out there that would be doing the same thing, and you can't afford it. It's something that really needs to be taken care of on that. Our veterans have been over there saving the countries and saving our country. And this is one way we can help them out when they come back. Because a lot of them will come back 100% disabled, coming back from before they left, being in a job that paid them $80,000 to $100,000 a year, coming back and trying to live on $2,500 a month.
Right. Questions for either Mac Mr. Ray? Thank you very much for coming forward. Again, thank you also for your service to our country.
Thank
we honor
you.
You. Thank you very much. I'm going to ask Mac if Mac, you're around the building enough. Can you follow up with Representative Donna Nelson and just ask her? These came from her committee. Can you follow up with her, please, and just find out what her... they must not have had access to the numbers that you're working from in order to have advanced these amounts.
I don't know, sir, but I'll find out.
Would you do that, please, and then you can get back with either myself or one of the vice chairs, if you would, please, and then let's see if we can't figure out what it is that we might be able to contemplate doing for the veterans. But again, it's pretty substantial fiscal too.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much, colleagues. That's. Let's see. We also had Michelle Deister. Michelle, you want to testify on all three bills, Michelle?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities.
Mr. Phillips sort of stole my thunder in a way when he mentioned that there are a number of other bills that affect property taxes and local government. And I guess I'm just here today to urge you to sort of look at them in terms of their total impact, both on the state budget as well as your local governments. I think that I don't think any segment is in a position to do them all, and certainly we are thankful of the sacrifices that, that our soldiers and our militia make, and we are also mindful of the services that we need to provide to our residents and to those veteran residents of our community, and we want to be able to do so in a way that doesn't impact them adversely.
That's a good, that's an excellent point, Michelle, that you still want to be able to provide them the public services, the fire and police protection that they also deserve as well. And I guess I need to ask Mary. Mary, the calculation that you've come up with regarding the revenue impact, is that the full amount of the tax, or is that just the amount to the to the school funds, or is this
the
full amount?
Okay.
Other questions for Michelle? Thank you, Michelle. We appreciate you coming forward with that admonition. And Mac, if you'll help us out by checking with Representative Nelson from whence these bills came. Colleagues, we will close the public hearing then on 2865. Let me just quickly review. Paul, you've got a schedule for next week, and I propose that we not meet on Friday. I've got one of those committees that's meeting on the other side of the state again, unfortunately. Some of the committees have far too much money. I've come to that conclusion where they're meeting all over the state of Oregon. I'm not sure what that's all about, but I'm just having too good of a time. So I'm proposing that we not meet on Friday unless the vice chair is wanting to pick out some really juicy bill that you want to have a work session on or something.
A couple come to mind.
I'm sure they do, Representative.
Another reminder for the committee, Mr. Chair, is that tomorrow you're meeting in room 50 at 12:30, and box lunch courtesy of League of Oregon Cities. And so they have some background information for you on urban renewal. And then from there, they will whisk you away to a couple of urban renewal sites and be finished by 3 o'clock. And the other scheduling, Mr. Chair, as you and I discussed, possibility of Wednesday stretching later than 3 o'clock, perhaps as late as 5 o'clock.
Colleagues, the number of bills that we are receiving on subsequent referral, as well as the number of Senate bills that will now start coming across, may very well dictate that we start meeting from 1 to 5. So I'm just going to ask you to start to take a look at your calendars. We will schedule on Wednesday, if we could, from at least 1 to 4, and then we'll kind of gauge how that sorts out. And thank heavens there's a lot of youngsters on this committee that can handle that. That long schedule.
Like you and
I like that. I'm just anxious that your calendars will accommodate a schedule a little bit longer than what we have been running, and I appreciate your indulgence and your participation. With that, colleagues, I'm again going to express my gratitude, our gratitude, the committee's gratitude, to our veterans present today, those both in the audience as well as those veterans here at the table. Thank you very much for your service to our country. We're indeed indebted to you, and we're grateful for your service. With that, colleagues, we will close revenue for today.